Kyle Mullen from the MERS newsletter. Kyle, how are you?
Oh, very well. How are you, Tony?
Good. What'd you do this weekend?
Me and my pregnant wife moved furniture around the house. That was really exciting. We all woke up with sore feet.
All right. So you got another one on the way.
Yeah, we do indeed. All right. Number two. You'll be a boy. We may name him Tony. We haven't decided yet.
Oh, boy, do a million comments come to mind, but we're not going to go there. Just don't name him Scubic, all right?
No, Timmy already asked that we name him Timmy, just for him.
Did he?
But I think we ruled Timmy out, though.
You know, there's a couple of things I want to talk to you about. One is about a bill I haven't heard a lot much on, but there are some bills now that will focus on biological fathers and their rights to be able to see their children. Tell us about this.
Yeah, actually, we've done a little bit of coverage on this one, and this has to do, this is a Steve Beta bill, and it kind of addressed these very rare circumstances where there's a man who impregnates a woman who is married to someone else, okay? You got to follow me here. And that woman then has the child. Now, by Michigan law, the man who got her pregnant then, the biological parent, has no legal right to that child at all. In fact, it's the married man who is, by law, the father. And so let's say something happens with the relationship. Let's say the married woman then is in the process of getting a divorce, which is usually the case here, and the man ends up not marrying this woman. But let's say this woman ends up in prison or something like that, or dead or whatever. Well, this biological father then wants the opportunity to have custody of this child, but cannot under state law. Has to go through a lot of rigmarole. This is a bill by Steve Beta that would give this biological father at least some rights in the legal system.
In a story that you've been covering at MERSNews.com, it's been a headliner for many news organizations, and it's about the comment from President Barack Obama where he says that the private sector is doing just fine. What's your take on that, Kyle?
Well, I think he's just kind of setting the framework here for his campaign and letting folks, telling folks that he thinks the economy is doing well. And, and I think that's really all there is to that. You know, he's coming up to a campaign where, again, the economy will be the issue, and where Mitt Romney's going to say, are you better off now than you were 4 years ago? Now, in Michigan, you can say the answer is yes, but that's not necessarily the answer across the country. And so I think that what he's saying is, in the private sector, the job-producing sector of the economy, is doing fine, even if you're not necessarily feeling it at home.
There is a representative in the state of Michigan who has been stripped of his committee assignments. Why is that?
Yeah, that's Harvey Santana from the city of Detroit, and it's because he's had a couple tirades on the House floor, and the last one was directed at his own leader, the House Minority Leader Richard Hamel. He got upset because he wasn't allowed to address or talk about a couple of his amendments on the floor, so he blew up at the House Minority Leader Rich Hamel, and Hamel just basically had enough and said, you know, you gotta, you can go sit down. And by the way, there's going to be repercussions for being this belligerent, and we're just going to take away your committee assignments. It's very rare, Tony. I mean, I haven't really seen this before where we've had a state representative be penalized like that. But, this is the same representative who got involved in that brief fight on the House floor, I think November, December last year. So, you know, he's a good state rep, but unfortunately he lets his passion get the best of him sometimes.
You know, we don't see it a lot, Kyle, but you're there a lot more often than most of us. Is there a lot of this discourse, yelling, screaming, almost, physicalness, if you will, when arguing or talking about certain legislation?
No, there isn't. I mean, the fact that it happens at all, then it becomes news, you know. There's some old stories about a flying ashtray and stuff in the state house back in the day, but by and large, that doesn't happen. I mean, this isn't the House of Commons or something in England where it's just fun to sit back and watch the screaming and the pointing and so forth. I mean, I think that by and large, the debate on the Michigan House floor and the Michigan Senate is very respectable, and very engaging, and outside of people, you know, not necessarily always paying attention, I think that it's very cordial and very professional.
What do you think the governor thinks about adding additional casinos in the state of Michigan?
Well, he said in Port Huron on Friday that he doesn't really like it at all. And, you know, somebody from Port Huron asked, do you support a casino for our city? And there's a ballot proposal that's circulating right now that would put a casino or would allow for a casino to be built in Port Huron. And he said no. And the reason is because you build one in Port Huron, but when you build one in Port Huron, then you're going to add one in Lansing and one in Grand Rapids and one in Romulus and one in, I think, Flint, and then one in, what's the other one? I think there's one in Macomb County or something. I mean, they're all over the place. And so, you know, what you're doing then is you're just creating your own local market for a casino. And then what ends up happening is the only people who visit your casino now are people from your own area, because there's so many of them, it no longer becomes a tourist destination. I mean, that's the whole point of casinos, right? Is if it's going to be an economic driver, it's got to be something that brings people from out of the area, you know, because it's new and unique. But if all of a sudden you've got 22 or whatever gaming casinos for Indians, you got three in Detroit, and then you got eight more private ones, where is your market coming from for your casino? And it's probably coming by and large from your own community. And that just means there's somebody in your own community who's getting rich off you.
The governor also made some comments about alternative energy.
Yeah, he did. He said that the ballot proposal that's being circulated right now, which I do suspect will get on the ballot, this one where you have to have 25% of your energy come from renewable sources by the year 2025, he says he's not in favor of that either. And it's because it's forcing demands on the market. I mean, he didn't really say it in these words, but I mean, this is kind of the argument, that what you're doing is you're creating an artificial need for alternative energy, and the market may not be ready for that. And what he did say, though, that goes along with that, is that you may be paying a lot more for your energy because we're going to have to accelerate the development and the construction of wind energy. Now, there are some statistics, and there are some professionals out there who say that that's actually not true, that wind energy costs less than coal or natural gas or any of the other systems that we get energy from. But he really believes that we should let the market decide that, as opposed to just putting something artificial into the state constitution.
When do you think we'll learn more about the governor's plan for the bridge from Detroit to Windsor?
Jeez, I don't know, Tony. I mean, it could be this week, it could be this month, it could be next month. But I do expect something will have to happen at the very, very least by November, when voters start voting on this other ballot petition to let the voters decide whether the state should enter into any agreement dealing with an international bridge. And that is a time frame, and that's hard and fast, and he really has to get this by. And this is an interlocal agreement with the federal government and the Canadians to build that second span over the Detroit River. And, you know, we're told that it's close, but, you know, when you're dealing with the Canadians and the U.S. federal government, you know, what is close? Define that.
All right. And Kyle, before I let you go, what are you going to be covering the next couple of days? What should we be looking for to on the MERS newsletter?
Well, this is the last week before the legislature adjourns for the summer. And at that point, they'll come back in September for a couple weeks, but then they'll take the month of October off for the House campaigns. So this is going to be a very busy week in the legislature, Tony. We've got some abortion bills that are some of the strictest in the country coming up in the House. We're definitely going to be paying attention to that. And the tax package, the tax cuts that the House wants, will be taken up in the Senate, as will reforms to the teacher retirement package, the MIPSers. That also is going to be coming up this week, and we're going to be paying close attention to that as well.
So one of the most important weeks of the year so far via the legislature.
Yeah, it is.
All right, Kyle Malin. Absolutely. Kyle Malin is the editor of the MIRS newsletter. MIRSNEWS.com is where you can find that. One of the greatest sources of information of what's going on with our Senate and with our House. Thanks so much, Kyle.
Hey, I appreciate the compliment. Thanks, Don.